18th and final chapter of Hilchas Gzeila Vaveda, the laws of stolen and lost objects. This chapter deals with the special status of lost documents, shtareis, and contains 14 halachas. Perek Shmeina Aser, the 18th chapter, halacha Aleph. In order to properly understand this halacha, we must review the law of achrayis and the idea of being teire from the lekuches. The law is, let's say Reuven has lent money to Shimon. Let's say he has lent him $1,000. Shimon is obviously responsible to pay this back. Let's say Shimon runs out of money and has nothing to pay him back with. Then Reuven can claim Shimon's belongings and can use his property in order to repay the loan. Let's say Shimon has no property, but he had property at the time he took out the loan. Let's say he had a car, but in the interim, after he borrowed the money, he sold this car to Levi, and he got the money from Levi and spent that money also. So now he has no belongings. The only belongings he had, even at the time of the loan, now belong to Levi. Can Reuven come and reclaim his loan since Shimon doesn't have it? Can he grab the car back from Levi? After all, when he took out the loan, he knew that Shimon had certain objects that he would be able to collect his loan from. Why should Reuven lose out if Shimon sold the car to Levi? It depends what was the agreement when the loan was made. If the loan was made in a way that there was achrayis, that Shimon was totally responsible for the loan, so to speak, then Reuven can collect even from Levi, even from those objects which Shimon sold, of course, after the loan was taken out, to Levi. If the loan was made without achrayis, that there was no responsibility, then Reuven cannot touch anything which belonged to Levi. He can only collect from Shimon's belongings if there are any. Let's say when Reuven lent the money to Shimon, he did not say explicitly whether there was achrayis or no achrayis. In such a case, as the Rambam will say in this halacha, the assumption is that a loan or a sale of some sort is always made with achrayis. And if the scribe who wrote the document did not write down that it was with achrayis, it was probably his mistake, because normally such a deal is made with achrayis. So if it says achrayis or not, it is assumed that it was with achrayis. The only time we would say there is no achrayis when it was specifically indicated in the document. Halacha Aleph. Hametzah shtar chayv. A person found a document saying that one person owes money to another. This document was found. And afal pi shelo pirush b'achrayis nechosim, even though it does not say explicitly that there was achrayis for belongings, va'afal pisha achayev meida, and even though the one that the document indicates owes the money, in this case, if Reuven lent Shimon $1,000, the document says that Shimon owes, and Shimon agrees that he owes $1,000. So certainly we should believe Shimon. Why would we say that this document has been already paid or is a false document? Shimon himself agrees to the document. And furthermore, even though the validity of this document has been validated by the Jewish court, that the signatures are valid and so on, nevertheless, if you find such a document, you should not return it to Reuven, the one who claims the document belongs to him. What possible reason could there be that we should not return the document to Reuven? After all, Shimon agrees that he owes the money. We'll first say outside and then see it in the words of the Rambam. We're worried about this case of achrayis, as we mentioned before. Let's say again that Reuven loaned Shimon $1,000 and then Shimon sold his car to Levi. Now, if Reuven and Shimon wanted to be dishonest, they could do the following thing. Shimon could pay back his loan to Shimon could pay back Reuven, and their deal has really finished. And Levi bought his field, or the car, whatever, from Shimon. And now Shimon and Reuven make the following dishonest deal. Shimon says to Reuven, I will say I didn't pay you back. You will come to collect the loan, and I will say I have no money. Legally, you will still hold on to this document, and then you will claim the car or the field from Levi. And since I sold my car to Levi and said explicitly there is no achrayis, that he cannot come and claim later other money from me, then Levi will be out of a car. We'll take the car, and we'll sell the car, and we'll split the money between us. If the document was found, we suspect that they would do such a thing. And even though Shimon agrees that he owes the money, perhaps he really doesn't, and is only doing this in order to cheat Levi. Therefore, we don't return it. And as the Rambam says, Shema Porei. Perhaps really Shimon has already paid back Reuven, and therefore Reuven has no claim to him. And they are making a dishonest agreement in order to grab away land or possessions from the Lekuches, those people that have bought from the one that owns the money. For example, Levi, who was the Lekeach here, who has bought something from Shimon, and they are going to do so Shalei Kedin, illegally. If Shimon had not paid back Reuven, and Shimon has no money in which to pay back or possessions from which to collect, then it would be Kedin. It would be legal for Reuven to take away whatever Levi has bought from Shimon. However, over here, Shimon doesn't owe Reuven any more money. Therefore, Reuven taking away possessions from Levi, Yishalei Kedin, is illegal. Ulaficho Chaydolei. And this is the reason we suspect that Shimon has agreed to Reuven that he owes him money. Because it still is possible to take away possessions with a document that does not say explicitly that there is achrayas. In other words, the Rambam is answering here, why is it, if this document that says that Shimon owes Reuven does not say explicitly that there is achrayas, that Reuven can collect even from objects or land which Shimon has sold, it doesn't say achrayas, why should we worry about this whole problem? And the reason is that even though it does not say achrayas, it does not say explicitly, we nevertheless can take away money from the lekuches or possessions from the lekuchos. Why? Sha'achrayas lo nisparsha toseferhu. When the achrayas is not specifically explained in the document, it was the mistake of the scribe. Bein b'shtari halva, bein b'shtari mekach u'memkar. Regardless of whether it was a document indicating a loan or a document of buying and selling. And therefore, since this is the only thing we have to worry about, if the document says explicitly that there is no achrayas, that it says that under no conditions would Reuven, in our example, be able to take away possessions or land from Levi, which Levi has bought from Shimon, if it says explicitly that, if the one indicated in the document who is the one who must pay the money, if he agrees, in this case Shimon agrees he owes Reuven the money, yachzir, we do return the document to Reuven. Why? Because we do not have to worry about this whole kanunya, this possible dishonest agreement that Reuven will end up illegally grabbing away Levi's money and splitting it between him and Shimon. However, nevertheless, we do not return this document to Reuven unless Shimon agrees that he still owes the money. V'im lav, if Shimon does not agree, if he does not admit owing the money anymore, lo yachzir. We do not return the document to Reuven, even though it has been established as a valid document in Bezdin, Shema Pare, because perhaps he already paid back this loan. The document is valid, or always was a valid document, but maybe he paid it back already. And that's why this document is lost. It was thrown out, or discarded. And the reason for this is that it was already paid. Therefore, we did not return it to Reuven because perhaps it is no longer a strong and valid document. Halacha Beis. Another case over here where we examine, do we have something to worry about or not? And so too, if we find a document, that the time written on the document, the date of the transaction, was on the same day we find it. For example, the document says the transaction took place Yud Beis Iyar, and we find the document Yud Beis Iyar. And the document has been, the validity of the document has been established by the Jewish court. And so too, the one that is indicated on the document that he owes the money, he agrees that he owes the money, yachzir. So too, in this case, we return the document, in our example, to Reuven. Why do we do so in such a case? Because we don't suspect that there could be any such kinunya, any such illegal, dishonest agreement. Why? If they wanted to make such an agreement based on this document, it's still the same day written on the document. They could write another shtar if they wanted. What do they need? This particular document? They could write a new one. The date on it is Yud Beis Iyar. They can get more witnesses. They'll write this date and no problem. Normally, that will not be sufficient in order to fraud Levi out of his money. Because it, let's say, really, the loan was made on Yud Beis Nissen, and they decide to pull off this trick on Yud Beis Iyar. Levi bought this field sometime after the loan. Otherwise, he has nothing to worry about. He bought it sometime between Yud Beis Nissen and Yud Beis Iyar. And therefore, we must produce a document, say Reuven and Shimon. If we want to cheat Levi, we must produce a document that the loan took place before he bought this field, meaning Yud Beis Nissen. If they're going to make up a document today that Reuven lent money to Shimon, this is not going to help him take away the field from Reuven. Therefore, if it's on the very same day that the document states that we find the document, there's no difference between a document written today and the one we found, and therefore we return the shtar. However, ve'im einam akuyim lo yachzir, if the validity of the document has not been established by the Jewish court, we do not return it to Reuven. Why? Because we have something else to worry about if the document has not been validated. Shema kotzav lilveis. Perhaps the one that wanted to borrow money wrote this document because he was planning on borrowing money for Reuven. Vadayin leilava, lava. And perhaps he has not yet borrowed the money. He wrote it so when Reuven is ready to give him the money, to lend him the money, he will not have to wait and run after a sefer, a scribe, and then run back. By that time, who knows, maybe Reuven will change his mind and not lend him the money. So he keeps the document on hand, waiting for Reuven to give him the money. But perhaps he is just holding on to it and has not yet actually received the money. Therefore, since the document has not yet been validated, we do not give it to Reuven because we have no proof that he actually did lend the money.
Halacha Gimel. Motza shtar b'chemes oy b'kli eitzu ki yitzu b'hem.
One found a document in a chemes, which is a leather container, or in a wood vessel, or something similar. Similar meaning it has identifiable trademarks. Hareze yachse lemisha nosan simen. This is returned. One returns this document to whoever can give an identifying trademark regarding the document. Meaning in this particular case, evidently, where it was found. One must identify where it was found. In the previous two halachas, a simen, an identifiable sign, although, as we have discussed in the previous chapters, is normally sufficient in order to claim a lost object, in these cases it is not sufficient. Certainly the one who originally had the document knows the signs of the document, but we would assume that once the loan has been paid, or whatever deal has been terminated, the document would change hands. This is something normally done. This is what we'd expect to happen with the document. Therefore, a simon is not enough. But over here, if there is a sign connecting it with the particular place where it is found, this is sufficient proof that the one that has lent the money, in our example we've been holding on to previously, that he, in this case Reuven, has placed this document either in the leather sack or in the wooden vessel. And so to Motza Shleisha Shtaros Kruchin Bekerach Echad, we find three documents bound together in one continuous roll. Or they were placed on top of each other and then tied together. Yachzer Lemisha Nosan Simen. Again, we return the documents to whoever can give the identifying trademark, meaning to say that there were such a number, such and such a number of documents, and that they were tied together in such and such a way. Kruchin or agudim, whatever it is, this is sufficient evidence that the one that is giving the sign has placed the documents there. Why is it, by the way, we say three shtaros? What would be the matter if there were two documents? The Gemara says that when you make an announcement that you have found documents, you must say documents in a plural form, and that would automatically imply two. So if a person would come and say that there are two documents, he could just be guessing from the fact that you used the plural form two. Therefore, only when there are more than two is the number considered to be an identifying trait. Now, in this past halacha, when we said we found three documents together, and we give it to anyone who can give a sign, this is conditioned in the next halacha, halacha dalet. Haya haleva echad v'amalvim shlesha. Let's say in these three documents, there was one borrower for all three documents, but the one lending the money was different in all three documents. There were three different lenders. For example, one document says Shimon lent money to Reuven. The other one said Levi lent money to Reuven. The third says Yehuda lent money to Reuven. Then, if the validity of all of these three documents is evident that they have been
validated by the Jewish court, Yachzir Laleva. We return all three documents to the one who says they're borrowed money. That since his name is on all three documents, if they belong to the lenders, why then would they all be together? They all be bound together. Evidently, the borrower has already paid off these loans, and therefore the document was given back to him, and perhaps he is holding on to them as proof that he has repaid the loan. However, this is only if he has validated the documents. Vim lav, if he has not validated the documents, yachzir lemishan nosan simin. Then you return the documents to whoever can give an identifying mark. Why? Why should we return it then? We still will have our question, how did these three particular documents come together? Kshema hamalvin nosnu shtaraseyim losefer lakaimam. Perhaps all of these people who lent money on these three different documents gave in the documents to the sefer, the scribe of the bezdin of the court, in order that he should validate the documents by finding the necessary witnesses and so on. V'naflu miyad adayin, and it has fallen from the hands of the judge. In other words, the judge had all of these documents together, and they all fell together. They were bound together, and he happened to drop them. What were they doing together? They were given into the bezdin. That's how they got to be together. So therefore, if they were not yet mekuyam, not yet validated, we cannot give them back to the borrower. Conversely, what do we do if there is one lender and three different borrowers? That Reuven lent to Shimon, Reuven lent to Levi, and Reuven lent to Yehuda. In such a case, we automatically give them back to Reuven, the one that lent the money. Because obviously, if they're all in one place, where else would they have been lost from? They all come from Reuven. However, if all three documents were in the handwriting of the same scribe, in this case, Yachzir Lemishan Nosan Simin, we return it to whoever can give the identifying sign of this document. Why? We still have our question, how did all three come to be together? Because if it's all in the same handwriting, perhaps all three of these people, all three borrowers, brought their document to the same scribe, lichtev, to write, for naflu miyad the sefer, and the sefer, the scribe, is the one that has lost these documents. Normally, the borrower has to take care of getting this document written, and he has to pay the sefer and so on. So all of these people were borrowing from the same one, and they all brought their documents to this sefer to be written, and perhaps he dropped them. And really, the transaction has not even taken place yet. So therefore, if they are all in one handwriting, it is no proof that all three are valid documents and that they all should be given to the lender in order that the prospective lender, in order that he should collect based on these documents. Therefore, only if he could give a sign do we return the document to him.
Halacha hei, motzei shtaros kruyin. We find documents which have been torn up. V'shtar chayv b'neihen. When we find one non-torn document indicating that there is a debt among all of these ripped up documents. Now this seems to be somewhat of a proof that this document somehow escaped being torn up, because normally a document is torn up when it is no longer valid, when the loan has been paid, or a similar case. If we find one non-ripped shtar in the middle of all these other shtaros, it would seem that this one is in the same category as them. One does not normally throw away a good document amongst a bunch of torn documents. So therefore, lo yachzir, we do not return this document to anybody. However, the question is over here that it would seem that the document should be returned to the borrower, because obviously it is among these ripped shtaris, these ripped documents, so probably the loan was paid back. Why should we not give it to the borrower that he can use as a proof that he has paid back his loan? Because we really have no proof either way of exactly what is with this document. Perhaps he did not pay back, and perhaps this document is invalid, and that's why it was thrown away. We have no proof. But therefore, v'imyeshimon shever, if together with this document was a shever, a receipt specifically stating that he paid back the loan, afilo belay edim, even though there are no witnesses on this receipt, yitin shtar achayv l'leiva, we do give back this document to the borrower to use it as proof that he has paid. She'ilu lei haya perua, if it was not paid back, lo yishlichei bein shtaras kruim, it would not have been thrown among a bunch of ripped up documents. Vareyeshi meksav shehu perua, and he does have with him a document that it was paid back. And even though that document, the receipt, does not have witnesses on it, since we do have the document itself, which apparently indicates, as a result of its being found among ripped documents, that indicating that the loan has been paid back, and we do have a paper, the shaver, also supporting this fact, even though the shaver has no witnesses, we give back the document indicating there was a loan. With witnesses on it, we give it to the leva, to the borrower, to use as proof that he has paid back the loan. Now the Rambam moves on to different sorts of documents. First he will deal with the law of a get, a writ of divorce. The law is that the man must write the get and then give it over into the hands of his wife in order to be valid. But the document by itself is worthless unless it has been handed over to her. Let's say we find a get which has been obviously lost. If it was dropped by the husband, perhaps it was not yet, and probably it was not yet given to his wife. If it was dropped by her, then she was already divorced. So who do we give this get to? If we don't give it to the woman, she will be unable to remarry. If we give it to her, she will remarry based on this get. But perhaps the husband dropped it, and she's really not divorced. Halacha Vav. Matza gita noshim. If we find a writ of divorce, bizman shabal maide, if the husband agrees and admits that he gave it to his wife already, yachzir le'isha, we give it immediately to the woman. And this is unlike the case we discussed at the beginning of this chapter, that even though the one who owes the money admits that he owes the money, we do not return it to him for fear that they are trying to cheat a third person. But since over here she is merely trying to remarry, we give it back to the woman. The Gemara asks, incidentally, that based on this get, also they could come to take away money from a third person. And the Gemara answers, as far as to take away money, this get will be invalid. We are only concerned here about allowing her to remarry. This, however, is if the husband agrees that he has divorced her. Ein habal maida. Let's say the man does not agree. He says that he dropped it and he never gave it. And the woman claims that she is already divorced. We must determine who is correct here. So we look. Im nasna ha'isha simen muvak. If the woman can give a clearly identifiable sign, yinasin la, we give the get to her because she must know that it was returned, that it was given to her already. Otherwise, she would not know this sign. Vim laf, if she is unable to give such a sign, lo yachzir, lei lo ze, v'lei lo ze. We do not give it back to either party since we have no proof who it belongs to. We will see from the end of the halacha that the simon we are speaking about over here is something that she would be unable to see except from a very close range only if the man has already given her this divorce. Omar habal mi yadi nafal. Let's say the husband said, "I dropped it; it fell from my hand." For nasan simonav, and he gives the signs to identify the get. For ishay meres mi yadi nafal. The woman says it fell out of my hands. For nasan simonav, and she also gives the signs. Yinasin la. Then we give it to her. Why should we believe her more than him? We don't believe her more. Actually, we believe both of them as far as the signs are concerned. However, it makes sense that both of them know. It's natural that he should know what the signs are. He himself wrote it. Or maybe he hired a scribe to write it, but certainly he was there and saw from a very close range the get being written, and he can give any identifiable signs. But this is not the case with her. She was not able to see it from close up, and if it had not been given to her, she would be unable to identify it. Why? Because as we will see now, vahu, this applies that we give it to her, shetitein siman muvak, that she gives a clearly identifiable sign, kagein sha'amra nekev yesh patzat eis plenis, that she says there is a hole in the get on the side of this particular letter. She'ilu lohi gil yoda lei hayesa yadas. If it had not yet come to her hand, she would not know such a sign. She would be unable to see it unless it had actually been given over to her in her hand. And that's why in this case we believe her, because her knowledge of this sign is a clear proof that it was given to her. Incidentally, this is a different definition of simon mubik than we have been using in the previous chapters, where as far as a lost object is concerned, even the size of the object is enough of a proof, is considered a simon mubik. But over here, it must be not only that she has seen it, but also that she has seen it from close range.
Halacha Zayin. Hu eimer simanei achut shekosher bei haget.
Let's say the man can give the signs regarding the thread which has been used to tie up the get, and she can also give these signs, then we give it to her. However, so too in this case, when she gives a clear sign, meaning she says exactly how long each thread is, which this is again something that she could only know from having had the get in her hand. But if she says that the threads were red or the threads were black, this is not a clear sign, because perhaps she could have seen the color of the threads even though it had not yet been given to her. Let's say he can identify the place where it was. It was inside a leather sack. She also gives the correct sign that it was lying in a leather sack. Who do we believe in this case? In such a case, we give it to the man. This is not an identifiable sign. Because normally, the wife knows where her husband keeps his important documents. And since he keeps all of his important documents, evidently, in such a sack, she automatically guessed that it was put in such a sack. If she wants to be able to prove that it is her document, she must be able to give a sign that only she could know only if she actually had it in her hand. Halacha Ches. This deals with another type of get. If you notice in Halacha Vav, the Rambam said not only get, but gitei noshim, which cuts off a woman from her husband. We also have a get shichrur, which cuts off a servant from his master. Matzah get shichur, if we found a document freeing a servant from his master. Bisman sharav meide yachzer le'eved. If the master admits that it is true, then we give the document back to the servant as proof that he has been freed. Ein harav meide, but if the master does not agree, he says that he never gave this document to free the servant, lo yachzer le lozeh v'le lozeh. We do not give the document to either one. In Halacha Aleph, we discussed a case where we suspected a borrower and a lender of making a false agreement between themselves in order to cheat a third party. So too, we will see in this Halacha applied to the case of a Shtar Matana, a document which was used to validate a gift. That when one person gives a gift, let's say Reuven gives a gift to Shimon, once it has been made official through this document, Reuven cannot change his mind and demand the object back from Shimon. In this halacha, we will discuss a suspected case in which Reuben and Shimon try to perpetrate a fraud on Levi. Halacha Tes. Motze shtar matana. We find a document registering a gift that Reuben gave, for example, a gift to Shimon. So, im matnas borihi, if it is a regular gift of a healthy person, this is in order to contrast with the end of this halacha and the next halacha, which will deal with the very different law of a matnas shchiv meira. But if it was a regular case of a healthy person giving a gift, and even though both parties, Reuven and Shimon, agree that Reuven gave a gift to Shimon, nevertheless, lo yachzir leilozeh v'leilozeh, we do not give the document to either one, not to Reuven, not to Shimon. What are we worried about over here? Similar to what we worried about in Halacha Aleph. Shema kosev litein v'leinosan. Perhaps Reuven wrote this document in order to give this gift to Shimon, but he never gave it. And after this document was written, and remember the object was never given, he sold this field, or he gave it as a gift to someone else. So Reuben wrote a document that he was going to give a field to Shimon, but he never gave it. After the document was written and dated, Reuben instead sold the field to someone else. He sold it to Levi. Now they come back and they say that this document is valid. Why did they agree to one another? Why does Shimon agree and say that he did receive this field as a gift? In order to pull a fraud on the last person, on against Levi, who was the field was given to him or sold to him. What's going to happen if Shimon now says that he was given the field? And here is the document. It was given to him before it was given to Levi. So therefore, Levi has no right to this field. It will go back to the hands of Shimon. And then they will make a deal between them, Reuben and Shimon. They will split between themselves this field, which in reality should belong to Levi. Therefore, even though both of them agree, we cannot trust them. And therefore, do not return the document to either party. This, however, contrasts with the end of this halacha about a shchiv merah. A shchiv merah is a very unique situation, which the Rambam will discuss in detail, beginning with the ninth chapter of Hilchas Shchiv Matana. This is a person who is mortally ill and is confined to bed. And in order that he should feel confident and he should feel comfortable that his possessions are being taken care of and his will is being followed, our sages established that anything he commands shall be as if it was written down and official. However, when he gives a gift to someone, he has in mind that it should be given to him only after he dies. And therefore, should he give a gift, Reuven is a shchiv merah, and he gives a gift, he says he's giving to Shimon. Later on, he changes his mind and says he's giving to Levi. And later on, changes his mind and said, I'm giving it to Yehuda. In any of these cases, he has the right to change his mind, and Yehuda, the last one, would actually be the recipient of this gift, since the gift is not fully effective until he dies. Therefore, in this case, if it's a gift of a shchiv merah, if the recipient written on this document agrees that he was given, we give it to him. If he doesn't agree, then we don't give it to him. Why should we not worry about what we worried about in the beginning of the halacha? If a shchiv merah gives to two people, one after another, the last one will be actually the recipient of this gift, as the Rambam will explain in Perek Tes Halacha Tes Zayin of Hilchos Shchiv Matana. And if we don't have to worry that the last one that received this field as a gift or bought the field should be cheated, because anyway the Shchiv Merah, should he have changed his mind, it goes over to the last person, so we don't have to worry that Shimon is going to claim that it's his and we're going to be cheating the last person. We'll anyway give it to the last person, even if we believe Shimon that the document applied to him. We can always, if as long as we have witnesses, we would give it to the last person anyway. And now a similar case, but now that the Shchiv Merah actually died. Let's say this Shchiv Merah died, and he has something he gave as a gift. Even though the one that is inheriting the estate, let's say Shimon is the son of Reuven. Reuven was the Shchiv Merah, Shimon is his son, and Shimon agrees that his father Reuven gave a field, for example, to Levi. Levi was the recipient of the field. So he agrees. Everybody agrees over here. Again, we do not give this field, this document, either to Shimon, the son who has inherited the estate, or to Levi, who the document says is the recipient of this particular field. Why is that? Because again, we're worried about a kanunya. We're worried about a fraud. What fraud could there be in this case? Because Shema kosev litein v'leinosan. Perhaps Reuven, the Shchiv Merah, wrote this document to give away the field to Levi, but he never actually gave it. Maybe he died before he actually gave the field. So now what happens? Levi has no right to the field. Now what happened? The field in reality belongs to Shimon. He inherited it. So, umachara hayeresh, oynasona. This Yeresh, Shimon, the son, sold the field to someone else. Let's say he sold it to Yehuda, or he gave it as a gift to Yehuda, for Chazar Bey, and he changed his mind, which legally he is not allowed to change his mind. A Shchiv Merah can change his mind, but the son of the Shchiv Merah can't change his mind. Now the field in reality belongs to Shimon. He gave it as a gift to Yehuda, and now he changed his mind. So what is he now doing? Shimon claims that it was really given as a gift to Levi. So what's going to happen? Levi says,
says it was given as a gift to me, and Levi's going to receive it. So what's happening? Bahari Hu Reitzelas is Kenunya Imze. The Shimon, the son, wants to make to pull off a fraud with this person, with Levi, who says on this on the document is the recipient of the field. In order to remove the possessions of this last person from his possession. In other words, the field, which in reality was sold or given to Yehuda, is now going to come back into the possession of Levi, and then Shimon and Levi will split it among themselves. And therefore, we cannot return the document in this case either.
Halacha Yir Aleph. Matza Shever, if we find a receipt in the street, or someplace else. Vizman Shabala Shtar Meide, Shenishper Shtare, in a situation where the one who is the owner of the document, in other words, the Reuven lent money to Shimon, and then we find a document, a receipt, saying that Shimon paid him back. So if he admits that the strength of his document, indicating that there was a debt, was broken, ufroi oy macholi, and that the debt was paid back, or he was meichel the debt, he said that Shimon no longer owes him any money, in such a case, yitin labal hashever, we give it back to the one who is written on the receipt, to give it to him as proof that it was paid back, since the lender also agrees that there is no longer debt. The Gemara brings a remote possibility we could worry about kenunya in this case, but explains that we don't have to worry about such a kenunya. Ain shnei amaidim, but let's say they both do not agree that the loan has been repaid. Lo yachzer leilo ze v'leilo ze. We do not give it to either one, since it is a case under dispute. The next halacha will deal with another possible kenunya, very similar to the one in halacha aleph, in this case dealing with a ksuba. A ksuba, the marriage contract which a man gives to his wife, is really assurance that in the case of divorce, or if he dies, she will be paid a certain amount of money. So if he divorces her, the ksuba is her shtar chayv, a proof that he owes her money, whatever amount is written in the ksuba. Therefore, halacha yud beis, motza ksuba, if we find a ksuba, even though both of them agree, the husband agrees that he still owes his wife the money of the ksuba, we do not return it to the woman, just as in halacha aleph, even though both of them agree, we do not return the document to the creditor. Why? Perhaps he has already paid back the amount indicated in the ksuba, or she has already been meichel, said that she does not want the amount of the ksuba. If this is the case, why is it that the husband agrees that he still owes the money? If he doesn't, why would he say such a thing? Because perhaps after he already paid back the ksuba, he sold some of his belongings, and now he wants to pull off a fraud to get these belongings back. He wants to make an agreement, a fraudulent agreement, in order to take back these belongings from the ones that brought it from him. Let's say Reuven was married to Rachel. He divorces Rachel and now has to pay back the amount written in the ksuba. If he sells something which belongs to him, some of his belongings, any of these belongings can later on be grabbed by Rachel if he does not have with any other belongings or money to pay back the ksuba, just like any other case of a debt. So if Reuven sells something to Shimon, later on Rachel can take away the belonging from Shimon and grab it in order to pay back her ksuba. If, however, Reuven has already paid back the ksuba, or Rachel has been meichel him, says he doesn't have to pay the ksuba, she has no right whatsoever to grab anything which was sold to Shimon. So really, we worry about over here. If we give the ksuba back to the woman, to Rachel, in reality, he already paid back the ksuba. Why then is he saying that he did not pay back yet in order that Rachel should grab away these belongings which were sold or given to Shimon, and then they will split the amount between them? Rachel knows she has no right to Shimon's the belongings which were given or sold to Shimon. Then she will get them, and she will give part of them to Reuven as a reward for his taking part in this kenunya. Since we are worried about such a thing, just as we don't return a shtar to a bal chayv, we don't return a ksuba to the wife. Up till now, we have dealt with all sorts of cases of documents that we have to worry that perhaps we should not return it to the apparently rightful owner because we have to worry that it's been repaid or that there's a fraud going on. Now, we will speak of documents where there's nothing to worry about. Halacha Yud Gimel. Motze Igra Shum. We find letters which were of calculation, meaning that the Beis Din made a calculation of the estimated value of the possessions of the borrower in order that the lender should be able to recover his debt by selling these possessions. And so too the Igreis Mozein, again, letters written by the Jewish court in order that we can take away a man's possessions and sell them in order to get Mozein food to feed his wife and children, that he is not feeding them. So the Beis Din sells some of his belongings in order to give them food. Shtar echlitza umiyunin, a document which is a proof that a chlitza has been given. In a case when someone's brother has died, leaving his wife childless, the person is required to marry his sister-in-law. And if not, he gives her a chlitza through the removal of the shoe, as the Rambam explained in Hilchas Chlitza. And the Beis Din, after it is done, gives her a shtar chlitza to prove that she has undergone this procedure and is free to remarry. And so to miyunin, the law is that if a girl's father has died, her mother or older brother is free to marry her off to someone. However, should she not desire this man, she does not need a get like a normal case of marriage in order to sever her relationship. She is allowed simply to make a statement, and this is known as miyun. After she does this, the court gives her a document to prove that she has undergone miyun and she is free from him. And so to Vishtari Atainis, documents indicating what were the claims in a legal case, the judges write down the claims of one litigant against the other and the other one's claims, where you found documents of birurim, which are behem ashtar shabir lehen bali dinin esadayonin shadanin lehem, that the judges who have been chosen by two litigants that were chosen by them are written down, the kiblu aleim shiadenu lehem plainiu plaini, and they accept upon themselves that this judge and this judge will be the relevant ones in their case. As the law is one party can pick what judge he wants, and the other party picks what judge he wants, and then these two dayanim pick out a third dayan, and the shtar, the document which upon which they indicate that they have officially accepted upon themselves these two, and their decision as to who the third will be is known as a shtar birur, or any of these documents. Or we find any document which is an act of Beis Din, such as a shtar chalata, indicating that the court has handed over the possessions of the borrower to the lender to collect his debt, or any similar case, you can return such a document because we have nothing to worry about these documents. The general principle is, and the Rambam now summarizes the entire chapter, any document that we are concerned that perhaps it was paid back, we do not return it for fear perhaps the loan has been paid back, the debt has been paid back. As we mentioned in Halacha Hay about finding one shtar amongst a bunch of others that are ripped up. And so to be moyo achay of meida, and even if the one who owes the money admits that he owes, however, ve'efshe shahaydik de lasses kanunya, but perhaps he did so in order to pull off a fraudulent agreement, ad sheyafsid al lekeach, until he will take money away from one that bought, a third party that bought an object, or someone who received a gift that was taken after the date indicated in the document, in order to take away these objects or the field away from them illegally, as we mentioned in Halacha Aleph and Tes and Yud Beis, in any of these cases we're worried about Kenunya, we do not return it even if both of them agree. But however, any document that we have nothing to worry about, that it was repaid or that there is a fraud, we return to the owner of the document, the rightful owner, as we mentioned in this Halacha Yud Gimel.
And the Rambam concludes, Halacha Yedalet, Kol Ashtaras Nimsoz Shedinon, Shelo Yachzir, any of these documents we mentioned, that legally you should not return them, Im Hichzir, if someone nevertheless went against the law and returned them, Hari Elu Ksherim V'Gevim Bahen, they are nevertheless kosher, and you can use them to collect, Vein Meitzina Yisr Mitachas Yad Baileyen, you cannot take them away from their owners, V'Hareheim V'Chazkoson V'Ein Cheshim Lahem, they are still considered to be good documents, and we do not worry about them. In other words, all of these laws that we mentioned in this perek are only lechatchila. We worry, and we do not want to lechatchila return the shtar. However, if it was returned, then it is nevertheless a valid shtar. Brich Rachmana Desayan, we thank Hashem who has helped us complete Hilchos Gzeilah V'Aveidah with this 18 chapters.